Welcome to the Piketon Massacre, a production of iHeartRadio and KT Studios.
This is 911. Can I help you?
I think my brother-in-law's dead.
It was an unimaginable crime.
There's blood all over the house.
It was the second biggest mass murder in 2016 behind the Pulse nightclub shooting.
8 people dead, all from the same family.
It would become the largest criminal investigation in Ohio's history.
Pike County sheriffs requested state help immediately after they got word.
In the early morning of April 22nd, 2016, 8 members of the Roden family were brutally murdered, shot to death execution style in their homes. 8 victims, 32 gunshot wounds, 3 children left alive at the scenes. This is the Piketon Massacre. Episode 1, Daddy's Playing Zombie. Piketon, Ohio is a rural town located on the Scioto River, just 60 miles south of Columbus. It's home to 2,200 residents, and the people of Piketon say that because the town is so small, neighbors really look out for each other and treat each other like family.
It was a good, wonderful area to grow up in. We lived in the country, and we rode horses on the road. We rode bikes to each other's houses, and we played. The kids in the neighborhood played together all the time.
I slept the whole time I was a kid with my window wide open. There's no way you could do that now. There's no way. This place was wonderful. Everybody took care of everybody, and now it's like a whole different place.
The Roden family lived in Piketon for generations. In fact, this close-knit family all lived within miles of each other and were a beloved fixture in the community. It's part of what makes this story so heartbreaking and disturbing. 8 members of the Roden family, ranging in age from 16 to 44, were murdered. Each killed execution style over one night in 4 different locations. The only known witnesses, the 3 small children left alive at the scenes. The Roden family was literally being hunted. I'm Courtney Armstrong, a television producer who helped make a documentary about the case for NBC Universal's Oxygen Network in 2019. Since it aired, the team and I at KT Studios haven't stopped thinking about the case. With trials on the horizon, there are new details and theories to explore. By all accounts, April 22, 2016 was an ordinary spring day in rural Pike County. But that would be far from the truth. Here's Barbara, longtime Piketon resident.
I'll never forget that day. I had gone into the office at the high school to pick Brittany up for an appointment. And when I walked in, they had a TV on and everyone in there was sitting with their mouths hanging open. And I was like, what's going on in here? And the secretaries said, my God, there's been a shooting. They said 6 people were killed. And she said, we are very worried because little Chris Roden didn't show up today. And we think he might be one of them. Everyone was just in shock.
So little Chris, law enforcement, because they couldn't find him, there was some speculation early on that he might have been involved.
For the residents of Piketon, there was little more than confusion at this point. People knew there was a shooting and that Chris Roden Jr., the 16-year-old freshman at Piketon High, was missing. Where was the teen? It was at the home of Chris Roden Sr. that the nightmare began. Chris Roden Sr. was known to be a strong, hardworking family man.
He was, a great father. He was a good man, just like the rest of the guys, in that family. He would do anything for anybody.
He and Dana Roden were married for 22 years, and although they divorced, they remained close. So close that Chris Sr. had recently bought Dana a home on the same road he lived on, Union Hill Road. He did it so they could stay close to their children. Chris Sr.'s cousin Gary Roden was more like a brother to him and often stayed at his place. Little Chris's aunt, Bobby Jo, who also lived nearby, was the first to make the gruesome discovery at 7:49 a.m. when she came to feed the dogs at Chris Sr.'s house.
911. Yes, I need up Jesse at 40. Let's go. Hold on.
I need you to tell me
the address. What's the address? Give me just a second. We walked to the mailbox. I think my brother-in-law's dead. There's blood all over the house.
Okay.
My brother-in-law's in the bedroom. It looks like I beat the hell out of him.
Patriarch of the family, Chris Roden, was dead. He looked like he'd been beaten to death. His cousin Gary, who was staying with Chris, was also dead.
Ma'am?
Hey, yeah.
What's his name?
Chris Roden and Gary Roden.
Chris and Gary Roden?
Both of them looks like they're dead.
You think they're both dead?
I think they're both dead. Looks like someone has beat the fuck out of them.
Okay. Is there anybody else in the house?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
The door was locked when we got here, but I know where the key was at. And I went in, and they were laying on the floor.
Okay. Bobby, I need you to get out of the house and wait.
I'm done now.
Okay.
I'm standing outside right now.
Okay, just stay out of the house. Don't let anybody go in there, okay?
Yeah.
All right, we got deputies on the way, okay?
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Dispatch says 40-year-old Christopher Roden was the only one of the 8 family members who was shot somewhere other than the head. He had multiple gunshot wounds to the head, torso, and extremities.
We found out, you know, the news broke overnight and saw the emails, saw the alerts, you know, the initial news coverage, and we all knew this was a big deal.
James Pilcher is an investigative reporter who was assigned to cover this story.
Chris Roden Sr. may have been awake when the intruders came in. At least there's some indication of that. He was shot 9 times, but he was shot in the forearm, which seems to mean that he may have raised his arm in defense. His cousin Gary got shot twice in the head and once in the face, and one was execution style and it had a muzzle stain. It was that close to his temple.
Even for a multiple murder scene, this stood out as being particularly violent. Wood fragments found on Chris's body indicate he was dragged through the house. Blood was everywhere. Was it a robbery? A serial killer? A random thrill kill? And if it wasn't random, why were these 2 men targeted? I spoke with Mike Allen, criminal defense attorney from Ohio. Are you familiar? Are you able to talk about the scenes themselves?
You know, if you look at it, and it's all from the autopsy reports, Chris Sr.'s autopsy report says that they believe that he was awake when he was confronted by at least one person with a gun. He got 9 gunshot wounds, and one of them apparently was a defensive wound to his right forearm that shattered the bone. He was also shot in the torso and cheek, according to that report. Then Chris Sr.'s cousin, Gary, and they're all kind of related here, he was shot twice in the head and once in the face. One of the shots, reports indicate that the gun was pressed to the side of his head, leaving a gunpowder mark that's called a muzzle stain. I mean, those kind of injuries leaves no doubt that this was an intentional, or these all were intentional killings, kind of designed to send a message to someone.
The muzzle mark sticks in my mind. You have to be, obviously, arm's reach. I mean, you are locking eyes with the victim, it would seem. Does that paint any kind of picture or indicate to officers or attorneys anything?
Sure it does. And maybe even closer than arm's length. I mean, maybe just inches. That indicates that the shot was fired right on top of the person, and it indicates to me, at least, especially when you have the number of shots like that here, that somebody was trying to send a message. I don't think there can be any doubt about that. It's personal. I mean, it was personal, and I think that's what that demonstrates.
Chris We're going to take a quick break here. We'll be back in a moment. At this point, Bobby Joe sees two people are dead by 12 gunshot wounds. While waiting desperately for police to arrive, she makes her way over to her nephew Frankie's house. She wanted to get some help and to tell him what had happened to his father and uncle, whose bodies she had just found. Frankie Roden was Chris Sr. and Dana's oldest son. The 20-year-old was a father to two boys, 3-year-old Brentley and 6-month-old Ruger. Like his parents, Frankie was a hard worker. He loved fishing, hunting, and demolition derby, but nothing so much as his family and his fiancée, 19-year-old Hannah Gilley. Hannah Gilley was on the homecoming court in high school, and at that time she told friends she planned to go to college, get a business degree, and open a daycare.
Frankie and Hannah wanted a lot of kids. They had a bright future.
The young family lived together just up the street from Chris Sr., also on Union Hill Road. They were looking forward to getting married soon. Here's reporter Jeff Winkler recounting the details of what happened that night based on his reporting.
So after Bobby Joe made the call to 911, she went to Frankie's house right nearby. And the person who came to the door was Frankie's 3-year-old son, Brentley. And Brentley was, as the police reports and newspaper reports showed, he was, you know, covered in blood. And he, like any 3-year-old, he sort of didn't fully understand what was going on. And he told his aunt that, you know, his father was playing zombie in the bedroom. And that's because the family were fans of The Walking Dead. And so, you know, Brentley was in there with his father playing zombie, which is, you know, absolutely heartbreaking.
Bobby picked up her nephew and made her way inside. She finds two more victims. Frankie was shot 3 times in the head. His fiancée, Hannah Gilley, was shot 5 times in total, with 1 shot to her left eye. They were both in bed with their 6-month-old baby. Thankfully, the infant was spared. Meanwhile, and this is all happening around 8 a.m. on April 22nd, Bobby Joe calls their brother James. She's in hysterics. There's now 2 murder scenes, 4 people dead, 20 gunshot wounds, 2 children left alive at the scenes. James immediately goes over to his sister Dana's house to check on her and the remaining kids. Dana Roden was a nurse known for her gregarious nature and loving smile. She'd met Chris Roden Sr. when she was just in high school, and it was love at first sight. Even though they divorced 22 years later, they remained very close. Together, the pair had 3 beautiful children, 20-year-old Frankie, Hannah Mae, and little Chris.
She's good-hearted, a lot of fun, you know, always laughing, cracking up. She was a very, very good person. She sent me a text. She said, "My grandbaby's here." And I said, "Well, congratulations." I said, "She's beautiful. What did Hannah Mae name her?" She said, "Kylie Mae." And I said, "That's so pretty." And that was the last, you know, the last thing I ever heard from Dana.
This particular April seemed extra special because Hannah Mae had just given birth to her 2nd daughter 5 days prior. Just weeks before that, Dana threw Hannah Mae a big baby shower at their new house. The pictures from the shower show what a happy celebration it was. Sadly, James, Dana's brother, was about to enter yet one more unimaginable scene. Dana and her 19-year-old daughter Hannah Mae were both dead. Like the rest of the family, they were shot execution style. Dana, 3 times in the right side of her head and 1 under her chin. Hannah was shot 2 in the head, lying in bed with her newborn daughter, just 5 days old. The infant was spared alive, and thankfully Hannah's older daughter Sophia, just 2 years old at the time, was not at the house at the time of the murders. This brings us back to when Dana's son, the high school freshman Chris Jr., was nowhere to be found. It took detectives several hours to locate him, but finally little Chris was found in the home with his mother Dana and his sister Hannah Mae. He'd been shot 4 times in the head. there's now 7 people dead, 31 gunshot wounds, and 3 children left alive at the scenes. The once small and sleepy town became the epicenter for a grisly crime and the subsequent complex murder investigation. When it was all said and done, 2 families would be destroyed and the town would never be the same. Here's Jeff Winkler. It was a long-form article he'd written on the case that originally piqued our interest.
I'm a writer and journalist based in Flyover, so I cover a lot of stuff that happens away from the coast. The Roden case, I remember seeing coverage of it in 2016 as it was happening on live TV, and there was a helicopter flying over the property, and it was just one of those things that seemed like it was straight out of Southern noir. The crime is as complex as it is gruesome, because all the victims, except for one, were found on the same sort of back road in Piketon, and they were all found gunned down on the same night, and all had gunshots to the head. This was a incredibly well-executed execution of several people.
Here again is criminal defense attorney, former prosecutor, and judge Mike Allen.
It hit this area like a ton of bricks. I mean, boy, the local media down here were all over this thing. I mean, like white on rice. So, yeah, it's a big deal.
Do you have any theories? Because I've spoken to people and they're all, I guess, just theories. But why do you spare the children? Is that some line a killer won't cross? Or what does that tell you?
Yeah, but and that's a really good question. I guess it shows that, I don't know, the killers wanted to demonstrate that they have some humanity left in them and just would not kill infants. I guess that's small consolation, but I don't know. It probably is some kind of code thing, but they did find it within their hearts to spare the infants and the children. You know, as brazen and as violent as these killings were, I guess they just couldn't bring themselves to do it to small children and an infant.
Yeah, a 5-day-old. I mean, that's...
Yeah, that's crazy.
For the quiet town, the scene was unreal. Nearly 7 hours after the first bodies were found, at 1:26 p.m. on April 22nd, a final, fatal discovery.
911, can I help you?
Yeah, I need a deputy to come out to close to 799 Leadfork.
Okay.
It's all this stuff. It's on the news. I just found my cousin with a gunshot wound.
Okay. So is he alive?
No.
Okay.
I'll be standing out by the red light on
it. What's your name, sir?
Donald Stone.
Donald Stone?
Donald Stone.
Stone?
I'm his cousin.
What's his name?
Kenneth Roden.
Kenneth Roden?
Yeah.
Okay, sir, are you out of the house?
I'm out of the house right now. I just went in, hollering at him, and checked. And I looked up at him, he had a gunshot wound.
Okay, sir, we're going to get deputies out there to you, okay?
Okay.
All right. Take care.
A few miles down Union Hill Road was Chris Roden Sr.'s brother, Kenneth. The 44-year-old was shot once through his right eye. Kenneth's cousin Donald Stone went to check on Kenneth after hearing about the murders of their 6 other family members. He'd failed to hear from Kenneth that day. Here's Jeff Winkler.
There were a lot of breaking news moments during the first day, and the details just kept piling up. And more police, more law enforcement would show up, and the body count got larger and larger. And then I think the real sort of twist and the real sort of what the heck is happening moment was when, you know, nearly 7 hours after the first bodies were found at around 1:30 p.m., there is finally another body of Kenneth. And he was found, as well as the others, as, you know, shot execution style. And in this case, he was covered with dollar bills that were strewn about his body. And it's just sort of, you can't make this up.
Let's stop here for another quick break. We'll be back in a moment. By the time officials released the names of the eight victims, Piketon residents were reeling.
You know, they had snuck in the night and committed these murders, and nobody had a clue about, you know, who or a why. And that's really scary.
There were rumors about who had done the crime everywhere, online, in the coffee shops, you know, amongst the police. I mean, everyone was talking about who could have done it and why they would have done it.
Within 2 days of the murder, officials would make another shocking announcement.
I'm going to let Attorney General DeWine speak.
Sheriff, thank you very much.
This is Mike DeWine, then Attorney General of Ohio, at a news conference on April 24th, 2016.
Let me go ahead, and I think it's okay for us to confirm that we did find marijuana in
three
locations.
Grow operations?
Is it grow operations?
Here's Jeff Shane. We worked together on the case, and he reached out to Jody Barr, an investigative reporter who was working in Cincinnati at the time of the murders.
Let's like run through some of the theories, like what people were saying might have happened.
So there were a lot of theories.
Jody has followed the crime and investigation for years.
We got all of these tips in, and we're trying to make sense of these tips, vet them, see if there's anything that could indicate who did it, why they did it, what caused someone to kill eight people of the same family. So, you know, the one theory that sort of became the prevailing idea of what might have happened here was the drug cartel theory. And, you know, that came about because, you know, hours after the murders, you know, Attorney General Mike DeWine and Pike County Sheriff Charlie Reeder are standing at a press conference, and DeWine tells the public that they found commercial grow operations at three of the four crime scenes.
Another theory was that the murders could have been the result of a dispute with another family in the area. Here's Jody Barr again.
We had gotten word that apparently Chris Jr. had some sort of road rage or some sort of incident with another family in the area some days before this. And there were some messages, social media messages exchanged that could have indicated a possible motive. So that was one theory. As I got on the ground over there and you started talking to some of these family members and you talked to some of the neighbors, some of the people who knew the Rodens, it became clear that either people knew or had a very good idea about what happened, but they absolutely would never say it because I think they were afraid, because at that point in time, whoever did this had not been arrested. There have been no persons of interest named. So, you know, if you lived in that area, man, it was hush hush. You were just kind of walking around looking over your shoulder, it seemed, with some of these people, not knowing, you know, who could be next, who did it.
This is, again, Jeff Winkler.
The majority of those theories rested on, you know, it was a cartel. It was a cartel hit because the family was growing marijuana on their property. You know, was it a rival marijuana farm in the area? Was it, were the killings related to the family disputes that were going on with various members of adjacent families? And no one quite knew, but they all had a bunch of theories.
With the town living in fear, investigators worked around the clock to bring the killers to justice.
Mike DeWine is, and again, I know him, but he's not a friend or anything, but he really is a professional, and he was a professional prosecutor. I mean, that's how he started his political life, and he ran this thing like a prosecutor or a law enforcement officer would. And I'll tell you what, there is just no way that the sheriff's office or the prosecutor's office up there could have handled this thing by themselves. And that's no knock on them. It's just that they don't have the resources for something like this.
There were in some of the news conferences, Sheriff Reeder was out telling people to arm themselves as a precaution.
In a small county like that, and just the horrific nature of these things, I don't know that would have not been good advice. I mean, obviously, they'd have to do it legally with a concealed carry license and the legal right to carry a firearm. But people just didn't know what the heck was going on up there. I mean, you know, you had all the different theories bouncing around, and it's a rural county up there. So if I were living out there and I was legally able to carry a firearm, I think I would.
For 2 years, not a single arrest was made. How could the largest massacre in Ohio's history, with so much blood, so many bullets, and so many victims, still be unsolved? The questions abound. Who's doing this? Is it many people? Is it one? How did they get away with it? If the scene was so messy, how did they clean up? The four crime scenes all had dead bodies, but the MOs were different. Chris and Gary's was the most violent and bloody. Two of the other ones had children left alive, and in the fourth, Kenneth was found with dollar bills all over him. With the victims all being shot at close range, we know that the killers and victims were eye to eye. How did nobody hear anything? Could it be a cover-up? And would another family be next? And then, on November 13th, 2018...
Well, good afternoon.
We finally got an update on the case.
We promised that the day would come when arrests would be made in the Pike County massacres.
This is Mike DeWine, the state's then Attorney General. He's at a press conference.
Yesterday, a Pike County grand jury indicted four individuals for aggravated murder with death penalty specifications for allegedly committing this heartless, ruthless, cold-blooded murder.
For the town of Piketon, with the alleged killers behind bars, the nightmare may have been over. But the mystery has just begun. Who is this family of alleged killers? Next time on the Piketon Massacre. Piketon Massacre is executive produced by Stephanie Leidecker and me, Courtney Armstrong. Editing and sound design by executive producer Jared Aston. Additional producing by Jeff Shane and Andrew Becker. The Piketon Massacre is a production of iHeartRadio and KT Studios. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.